So our next speaker is Károly Csukás, who is going to talk about super radiant scattering of wave packets with compact initial support. So please start.
Thank you. So my talk is based on parts of this paper here. You can find the technical details and some more results in this paper. I will talk about super radiant scattering of linear perturbations over Kerr black holes. The evolution of such perturbations is governed by Sikorsky's master equation, where the S in wave parameter specifies what kind of perturbations we are considering. S is vanishing for scalar fields, plus minus 1 for outgoing and ingoing electromagnetic radiation, and plus minus 2 for outgoing and ingoing gravitational radiation. We have used the RT coordinates, so both the horizon and the future node infinity is on the computational grid, so we have direct access to these places. And apart from the coordinate transformations, we also have to rescale our variables, so the singularities are removed from the equations. Within this framework, we have integrated numerically in the time domain Sikorsky's equation, with setting the mass parameter to 1 and rotational parameter to 0.99. So, brief summary about the most important aspects of super radiant scattering. So in Schwarzschild spacetime, the asymptotic time-like Killing vector field changes its causal nature on the horizon, so it is space-like inside the black hole. In Kerr spacetime, this change occurs well outside the horizon. In this figure, the orange sphere represents the horizon of the black hole, while the blue surface signifies the outer boundary of the ergo region where this asymptotic time-like Killing vector field is space-like. Why is it important? Because if this vector field becomes space-like, then the local energy density is no longer guaranteed to be positive. In case of fermionic fields, we have other positive definite quantities, so no effect occurs there. But for bosonic fields, the inflowing energy flux at the horizon looks like this. Here, omega is the frequency of the inflowing wave packet, m is the magnetic quantum number of the spherical harmonics representing the angular dependence, capital omega plus is the angular velocity of the black hole, and t is the transmission coefficient in this scattering process. And we can see that this factor in the middle might become negative, signifying outgoing energy from the horizon, so we can extract rotational energy from the black hole. Whenever m is positive and omega is between zero and m times capital omega. And of course, this is only interesting if the transmission coefficient is not vanishing. The study is concentrating on the effects of different positioning of initial data. I forgot to mention this also. So we can have some estimates based on previous works. I refer here to Sikorsky and Press. So they found that in case of scalar fields, this effect has 0.3% amplification in energy if it is perfectly tuned in frequency, and then 4.4% amplification in case of electromagnetic radiations, and large 138% amplification in case of gravitational fields. So now we turn to the initial data. So we studied how different positioning of initial data changes the amplitude of the effect through the variation in this transmission coefficient. Here we see the bump functions responsible for the compact support of the initial data. The vertical dashed lines represent the horizon, location of the horizon, and the equatorial extent of the ergo region. Type 1 initial data consists of infalling wave packets started far from the black hole and the ergo region, and opposed to this, type 2 initial data is concentrated inside the ergo region. These two cases are fine-tuned by changing the frequency of the solution, and we use this fine-tuned frequency in the third case, where we don't modify the frequency, but the right edge of the compact support. So the support getting bigger and bigger. So apart from these windowing functions, the initial data consists of a single spin-weighted spherical harmonic responsible for the angular dependence, and these initial data are motivated by the spherical wave solutions of on Minkowski background. So here we have this expression in terms of retarded coordinates, and similarly the time derivative is deduced from this flat spherical wave, and we assume that at least far from the black hole these initial data will produce solution with a narrow frequency band and with a narrow frequency profile, and omega naught is close to the real frequency of the solution. And returning to the angular dependence of type 2 wave packet, the horizon and the outer boundary of the ergo region coincide at the poles. So depending on the specific spherical harmonic in the initial data, some portion of the initial data might be outside of the ergo region in type 2 case, but dominantly these are inside the ergo region. Okay, so we now have the equation initial data. How do we characterize the solution? As I mentioned, omega null is not the real frequency. So in order to verify that we are in the right frequency band, we compute the power spectra by taking the L2 norm of the Fourier transform of the solution. So this way we can verify that we are indeed in the right frequency band, and also we retain the R dependence, which would give us valuable hints on the physical processes. Computing the energy of the solution is not so straightforward. We have chosen to use the canonically conserved currents of Thot, who constructed a Lagrangian from two independent opposite beam wave solutions of the Zhukovsky equation. In case of scalar fields, we choose these solutions to be complex conjugate of each other, that's recovering the Lagrangian of the Klein-Gödel field, and we have the standard energy and angular momentum. But in general, this procedure results in complex canonically conserved currents, which are not quite well understood in terms of their physical interpretation. So whenever I mention energy and angular momentum, we should keep in mind that these are not physically understood notions and are not directly comparable to previous results because of this. So I mentioned that we need two independent solutions with opposite spin wave to construct these currents. How do we characterize a single solution with them? We can compute the spin wave S adjoint solution to the spin wave minus S solution, because the opposite spin wave Zhukovsky equations are adjoint of each other. And here this partial differential operator is second order for electromagnetic and fourth order for gravitational radiation. Now we can compute the initial energy content of the solution and the energy flux at infinity. And using these two quantities, we define. Okay, so as I mentioned, delta E is one whenever all the energy falls into the black hole. It is zero when all the energy leaves to infinity. And it is negative whenever more energy leaves to infinity than we originally had. We say that the effect is 100% when twice the energy leads to infinity than we originally had, so delta E is minus 1 in this case. In the paper, we also studied the evolution of angular momentum, but here I will restrict myself to the energy and the superradiant amplification in the energy. So we have everything to talk about the results, but before that, I want to sort out some uninteresting cases where the dynamic is pretty simple without any effect. Usually, solutions with negative M simply fall into the black hole. We have some exceptions I will show you during this talk. Then, solutions with positive spin weight represent outgoing radiation, so starting them far from the black hole near to infinity, they simply leave the domain through infinity without any effect. And similarly, negative spin weight solutions representing ingoing radiation, whenever we start them near the black hole, they just fall in without any
amplification effect. So these out of the way, turn our attention to type 1 scalar fields. Here we see the spectra with, for solutions with different omega naught. And we see that they don't like to interact with the Diago region. The initial wave packet starts from far Diago region, starts falling in, and then got reflected and leads to infinity. When increasing omega naught, we managed to push this wave packet closer and closer to the Diago region. Here, when omega naught is 0.325, we are still in the right frequency domain, but hardly any interaction with the Diago region.
Hello?
Yeah, I
have a question.
Yes?
Can you please give a bit of a better introduction of how to read these things? Like, what is where in these diagrams?
Okay, sure. So in the horizontal axis, we see the frequency normalized with this M capital omega. The vertical dashed lines represent omega equals zero, and omega per M capital omega equals plus one and minus one. We expect to see supervariance when the spectra is between here the zero and one vertical lines. The horizontal dashed lines represent the Diago region and the equatorial extent of the Diago region and the horizon of the black hole. So on the vertical axis, we have the radial dependence. Okay?
On the vertical axis?
Vertical axis is the radial dependent. Capital R equals 1 signifies the future null infinity.
But it's the radial coordinate of the vertical. Okay, thanks.
Yes, exactly. Welcome. So we see that these wave packets start falling in towards the black hole, but they get reflected and leads to infinity. And as we increase omega naught, we manage to push these wave packets more and more closer to the Diago region. For omega naught equals 0.325, we are still in the desired frequency domain, but we cannot interact much with the Diago region. However, increasing omega naught more, we can interact with the Diago region. Actually, some portion of the energy falls into the black hole, but we are outside of the desired frequency range. And we can see the same process dynamics in the amplification factor. Here we see the time dependence of the amplification factor. After most of the dynamics is over, the best we can have is some small but positive delta E, signifying that there is no amplification. And for omega naught equals 0.4 and 5, we see that indeed some portion of the energy falls into the black hole. Okay, now turn our attention to electromagnetic radiation. Here we see that they are more willing to interact with the Diago region. We also have these spikes here, here, and here, which I will return in the next slide. We only have to fine-tune the frequency of the incoming wave packet, and the amplification tells us that the optimum is near omega naught equals 0.28, where we have almost 2% effect, 2% of amplification after all the dynamics takes part. Now, for gravitational radiation, here you see that the spikes are getting stronger and stronger, and here we don't see anything other. They completely dominate the spectra. In order to understand the origin of these spikes, we have to compare the spectra of the full time series and the time series without the initial dynamical part containing only the quasi-normal modes of the black hole. And we see that although with a worse resolution, but these spikes represent the quasi-normal modes of the black hole. So we cannot deduce much more from the spectra, but the amplification signifies some 33% effect in case of gravitational radiation when the omega naught is set to 0.725. So I mentioned that we could not directly compare this work with previous results, but it is still meaningful to compare different kind of initial data to these type 1 solutions. So type 2 solutions, simply the scalar field falls into the black hole. We try to change the sign of the time derivative in the initial data, and is resulted in some portion of the wave packet leaving through sky, but delta is between 0.55 and 75, so there is no effect there. Which is more surprising that even for electromagnetic radiation, this delta E is roughly constant for whatever omega null we take from this range. But we have some effect in gravitational radiations, both for positive M and for negative M, surprisingly. For positive M, we have roughly 150% maximum when omega null is 0.8. And for negative M, the effect is roughly 5% irrespective of what omega null we choose. And then for type C solutions, so just a reminder that here we set the omega null to the optimal ones find in type 1 solutions, and here we see some actual radial dependence of the initial data in case of the radiational gravitational radiation. So again, in scalar field case, we don't have any effect, and surprisingly, in electromagnetic case, we have effect only in the M equals minus 1 solution, so no effect for M equals plus 1. And here we have 6% effect when the support initial support is the widest, so almost covers the computational domain. And for gravitational radiation, we again have effect both for M equals 2 and M equals minus 2. For M equals 2, we have a huge 400% effect when the right edge of the initial support is set to 0.76. But as we increase the cover of the support of the initial data, the effect in M equals minus 2 gets closer to zero, indicating a vanishing effect in the limit. So, for conclusion, we have seen that superradiance is suppressed for the type 1 solutions compared to type 2 and type C case due to some kind of reflection. And to interpret these results, we refer to the laws of black hole dynamics. Together with the first and second law gives us this inequality, which should hold in order not to overskin the black hole. And when we compare the energy and angular momentum content of the fine-tuned solutions, we see that only a small portion falls into the black hole, because otherwise it might overspan the black hole. And as for the limitations of this study, as I mentioned, we use this complex angular momentum and energy currents, so our results are not directly comparable to previous works. And also, we have only studied a single class of initial data. Maybe other type of initial data with a narrow frequency band, but with less angular momentum compared to its energy content, might give a different result. So that was my talk. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Yes, there is one. Maybe try to take off your mask.
Yeah. Okay. So the one question I have, there is the old result by István and Andrzej, where there was, I think that was limited to scalar fields, if I remember correct. So is that the same thing you get there as you get here, or is there something different?
Yeah, the results are completely in agreement with those results. So, yes, those were for scalar fields, and they noted a reflection in the scalar field. And as I showed you, in this case, we also found this kind of reflection for scalar fields. However, the electromagnetic and gravitational radiation is not that much affected by this reflection. We also see this effect, but it's much lower, smaller.
Do you understand why this reflection happens and you cannot see super radiance in the thing?
Well, as our current understanding, when these wave packets interact with the black hole, the incoming energy and angular momentum are not independent from each other. That's what I tried to express with this argument related to black hole thermodynamics. So we have the impression that whenever a small portion of energy falls into the black hole, then a lot more amount of angular momentum would fall into the black hole with that packet of energy. And this would somehow overspend the black hole if not this reflection occurs. So we don't have
But doesn't super radiance exactly provide this protect from this overspinning? That's always the way I understood this.
No, but there should be something inside the equations that have this interaction encoded in them. But I can't point you to a specific term or a specific process at this point. Maybe some studies using the complete nonlinear scenario would explain this effect.
Caro, may I have a comment?
Yeah, sure.
So just to explain, we used compactly supported initial data in order to mimic that. You know, always there is a claim that one can extract energy from rotating black holes. And if we imagine some, intelligent agent who is preparing data for this, assume that he has, or, you know, the creature has some limitations of preparing initial data, not, putting everything inside the ergo region originally. I mean, just move this support of the initial data, and when the initial data was separated from the ergo region, we had no effect regardless what sort of perturbations we used. When we did this work with András and Peter Csizmadia, many years before for scalar field, we were facing the blaming by many people that, but you are contradicting with the general belief. So we wanted to mimic now here what happens, or investigate what happens if we put the support of this, compact support overlap with the ergo region. And then we could find even 400% of, energy production. But how can one expect that somehow we prepare initial data next to the black hole horizon? I mean, this is something by nature dangerous. So we just wanted to ensure, everybody that if you use the mode analyze and you have this, frequency domain arguments about super radiance, you will always have an estimate for large energy production. But if you do this in the time domain and you are restricting yourself to physically reasonable initial data, then you have some troubles to extract energy. And the explanation is coming really by the first and second law of black hole thermodynamics. I mean, you can understand. And what was puzzling for us, we had energy and angular momentum type quantities which were complex. And regardless what was the spin of the perturbation, always we got something very strange satisfaction of the norms of or of the absolute values of these quantities were used, and regardless of the spin, it was always satisfied. Okay, sorry.
Thank you. There is also an online question. András, László, please ask your question.
Yeah, so, Károly, didn't you... I'm not sure if you can hear me.
Yes, I hear you.
So, didn't you say that for the spin 2 case, or for the gravitational case, you observed energy extraction for both for plus minus m equal to 2? Did you say that?
Yes, in case of type 2 and type 3 data, we have effect for both m equals 2 and minus.
But how this is possible? I think the you get in the plane wave approximation, one gets one has to tune the frequency of the plane wave such that it is between 0 and m times the horizon angular speed. So I think it is it possible really to have effect for both signs of m for given the omega null fixed?
It is sure that this effect only relevant when we have the initial data support inside the R region. And
I understand. Okay, so this explains everything. Okay.
That is a weird case. So.
Okay. So it is basically for unphysical and initial data, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mentioned here that whenever this support gets bigger and bigger, then this effect, as we get further and further away from type 2 initial data, it goes to zero. So
okay, I think it is. I think I understand.
The type 2 initial data.
So thank you very much. Any more questions? Since there are no more questions, let's thank the speaker and all the speakers for today. Thank you. Is there any announcement? No? Then let's meet tomorrow at 9:30. Bye-bye.